Okay, so maybe we can begin. And one of the things I said, oh, first I'll make sure you're hearing me. So some signal of some sort. Wonderful, thank you. So one of the things I said this morning is that emotion, I think it's useful to consider emotions as messengers. And they have a message, or there's something to learn from them. And it's important not, there's this idea you shouldn't kill the messenger. You should, receive the messenger and try to figure out what the message is, decipher the message maybe. And with emotions, there are two general directions to discern the message of the emotion. The one that's probably the orientation of many people who have been acculturated in the Western psychotherapeutic milieu that maybe many of us have lived in. And that is to consider that the message is what's underlying it, what's the source of it, what's the reason it's there, what's the cause of it, something like that. And definitely, that's actually a very important part of Dharma practice. Not necessarily the cause of it, which can be a wise thing otherwise to do. But in Dharma practice, we're not really looking very often at the cause, like historical cause, as we are looking for the roots of it. And that's the language that the Buddha used, the roots, but the root that is in the present moment. So if we're angry because we feel hurt, then the sense of hurt is the root for the anger. If we're angry because we didn't get what we are greedy for, then greed is the root for that anger. And so you see, so you kind of under so and the nice thing about it being in the present moment, the root, is that as we bring our mindfulness carefully be present for what is, the what is opens up. And we start seeing the underlying operating principles that are the roots of things. So this idea of going kind of to the roots, to the cause, to the what's underlying it, I think is somewhat common in the West and understood more easily. The more traditional Buddhist way is to consider the consequences of our actions and consequence of what happening. And to consider whether it has a beneficial or harmful effect on ourselves and on others. And one of the characteristics of harmful and beneficial effects is that is a language of skillfulness or wholesomeness. Things are can be wholesome and unwholesome, skillful or unskillful. Both pairs are a translation of the Pali word for kusala. An akusala. And when you're talking about something as skillful, then you have a little bit more sense of what's the effect, what's the consequence that we do. We develop a skill for a particular purpose. And if it's unskillful, then it has a negative purpose. It has a, the results of it are not useful. When we translate these terms as wholesome and unwholesome, it's a little bit more the consequence here and now. That you can feel that certain things that we're emoting are just not nourishing, not supportive, not helpful, not nourishing for us. They actually debilitate us, they drain us, they alienate us, they cause stress for us. Other emotions clearly are nourishing, are beneficial, are de-stressing, are freeing or bring sense of well-being. And the sense of that things can be wholesome or unwholesome in the moment, even if it's not looking so much at what they're going to do, just doing them is wholesome. So for example, having the emotion or the feeling of being generous, if it's clean generosity, it just feels nourishing. It feels good to have it. there's a kind of uplifting, nice feeling of joy or well-being in the feeling of generosity. Clean compassion, compassion unburdened by any kind of conceit, any kind of stress, any kind of reactivity, just it kind of has a sweetness to it. And that sweetness is nourishing. That sweetness feels wholesome. It's, oh, this is good in and of itself. So the consequences of emotions and attitudes that we have, are they good in and of themselves, or do they feel off in and of themselves? Do they feel that they are leading to a good place, or do we feel like they're leading us to a wrong place? So this kind of distinction is really key in the Buddha's teaching on the path to liberation, because it is a path to liberation. And so you want to be able to discern how to find that path and to recognize it. And not by reading a book that tells you, that gives you the map, but rather it's a path that's found by learning to recognize for yourself, where's the wholesome step now? What's the unwholesome step to avoid? What's the skillful thing to do in this circumstance? What's the unskillful thing to avoid doing? And so this idea of skill, skillfulness, wholesome, and wholesomeness has something to do with getting a sense of the consequences of the emotions we have. And so, for example, to spend a lot of time with anxiety and fear, it doesn't feel, you know, enlivening. It doesn't feel healthy. It doesn't feel nourishing. If anything, it's the opposite. To spend a lot of time with fear, the consequence is a loss of vitality, a loss of engagement in the world, a loss of friendship, a loss of all kinds of things we can lose. Spend too much time with fear and we're truncating ourselves. We're limiting ourselves to the world of that fear. And probably 90% of who we are is left out. And we're kind of blinders on, and that's what we see. So the consequence is a kind of alienation from ourselves, a limiting of ourselves. If we spend time being angry or having envy or resentment, that in and of itself doesn't feel nourishing. It feels kind of lousy. It's like if you could feel it kind of that it's off. Unless it's vitalizing for someone who doesn't have a good sense of being alive, and they only feel fully alive with good energy if they have a good thing to be angry about, good thing to hate. There's no good thing to hate, but, you know, just, you know, something that gets them going. And some people cherish their anger and their hate because of how it gives them a sense of vitality and purpose that overcomes their sense of lack of purpose and lack of vitality. So they say it feels beneficial. But if you really pay attention, and that's the role of mindfulness, to the consequences of hate, the consequences of resentment and envy, we can feel, in spite of some, occasionally it might feel kind of good to have it, at the core, it's really debilitating. It really limits us. It really is very stressful for the heart, for the body, for the mind, to live in the world of resentment and anger and envy and these kinds of things. And I know some people who've only given up their resentment when the mindfulness practice they were doing got them to really take stock of what the consequence, what the effect of their resentment had on themselves. And when they realized how much pain they were causing themselves and how little pain they were causing the person they were resentful for, they said, you know, this doesn't make any sense to be harming myself this way. And I want to harm that other person, but, you know, the person's forgotten who I am. It's been so long. And, you know, so it's not working for them, but it sure is harming me. I've not literally known people who that was the key to get them to, okay, let me put this down, let go. So to get a sense of the consequence, get sense of the impact that these different emotions and attitudes have, then we have the opportunity to choose the emotional life. To some degree, we can choose the emotional life that is healthy, wholesome, beneficial and avoid the one that's not. How do we do that when we don't feel like we have any control over the emotions that we have? That where the emotions just have a life of their own, they take over, and are just kind of being tossed around in rough seas by all these emotions that just kind of come coursing through. One way this begins is by the attitude with which we relate to all the emotions, difficult challenges we have. Is we look for the place, where do I have some choice? Do I have choice about how I pay attention to it? Do I have a choice where I find it in my body, how I look at the stories? Do I have a choice about how I recognize it? Do I have a choice about trying to find some stability, modest stability in the middle of it? And if we exercise that choice, then we're choosing to go in the direction of what's potentially or likely to be beneficial. To learn how to be present for very difficult emotions without being caught in their web, that is wholesome. Mindfulness is said to always be wholesome, always be healthy, even if what we're mindful of does not feel like it is. And I think that it's fairly common for people to define themselves and come to conclusions about who they are and what's happening in their lives by the content of their emotions, the kind of emotions they're having. It's kind of like people are interpreting them. And so then the question is, how are we interpreting the emotions we have? So one is, what's the relationship we have to it? How are we interpreting it? And is there another way to relate? Is there another way to understand or to interpret what the emotions, the presence of the emotion means? And so when I say that emotions are a message, a messenger, that's meant to be to break the strong impulse that some of us have to assume that the emotion kind of has some truth in and of itself that we have to kind of listen to. But instead, to say, what is it I can learn from here, is to step out of its grip and to be wisely, what can I learn here about what's healthy and what's unhealthy? What can I learn here about what's nourishing and not nourishing? You don't have to be the victim of your emotions. You can. There's a practice that's teaching us how to not be the victims, but to be to have the choice to respond in a way that feels healthy. But for that purpose, we have to have a sense for what is healthy. We have to have a sense for what is wholesome. We have a sense of what's beneficial direction to go. So in practicing with emotions, mindfulness of emotions, it's that mindfulness is more than just being aware of the emotion. It's also being able to recognize, not evaluate, not analyze, but to recognize almost in a feeling way. Does this feel wholesome? Does this feel nourishing? Is this opening me in some way? Or is it closing me in some way? Is this helping me be connected to my life? Or is it contributing to kind of a disconnection to my life? So looking at the consequences of the emotions. And as we begin finding, settling into doing mindfulness practice, and it becomes kind of almost second nature that we're living in the world of being mindful of what we're doing, then it becomes easier and easier to discern what is wholesome and what is unwholesome. And people who have developed this capacity find themselves choosing the wholesome over and over again. And it can be something as simple, to give a really mundane pedestrian example, how we sit in a chair. We can ask ourselves, is how I'm sitting, is this beneficial? Is this wholesome? Do I feel nourished this way? Do I feel, is there something good about the way I sit or not? And I know I've sat in chairs and couches, kind of depressed, kind of upset, kind of angry, and kind of slumped and paying no attention to my posture and kind of collapsing and different things. And then when I stopped to pay attention to my posture, I recognized the effect that posture had on my mood, on my attitudes, on myself. And I would sit up and choose to have a posture that the posture itself felt much better to sit in. And as that posture became better, lo and behold, it affected my mood in a positive way. Sometimes not having positive emotions, but the negative ones stopped being so strong. So it's something as simple as your posture you take sitting in a chair. I don't know if it's simple, but it could be something about how much you speak and what you speak about. Just like what you think about a lot has a big impact on ourselves. When we speak it, it also has an impact on us, ourselves. How fast you speak is how fast you speak in any situation. Does it feel good this way? Or are you carried away by how important your words are that you can't say it fast enough because it's so important? And then you feel exhausted afterwards. Or are you speaking in a way that feels nice for you to speak? It feels like, you know, this is a nice way of talking and comfortable. Your attitude towards people. If you don't like someone, are you living in that dislike? Are you choosing to have thoughts and attitudes and decisions about, oh, I want to be away from that person, I don't like that person, I'm going to, you know, talk about that person to other people about how they're so dislike and unlikable? To really feel what those kinds of thoughts and those kind of reflections are, it can feel like something's off inside. It's stressful. Say, well, I don't like the person, but I wonder if there's some other way of relating to them that's honest and truth. I'm not going to be Pollyannish, but maybe I could take a second look or a third look at this person. Maybe I can have respect for them at least. I like them, but I'll respect them. I like them. I don't like them, but I bet they've done something good in their life. I bet they have something. What can I see in that person? In spite of their bad qualities, what can I see that's good and what can I appreciate? To have that kind of reflection might not help the person, but it will make a difference to you. So this world of emotions is not a world, it's a multifaceted world of lots of things, and some of it is motivational. So there are people who claim that most emotions have embedded within them some motivation, something that's wanted or not wanted. You certainly feel that with love, for example, want to be close to the person you love, maybe. Or it's compassion, wanting someone to be free of suffering. Hatred, wanting that person to be away from me, push them away. There's a motivation there. So there's already in many emotions a kind of attitude, a kind of choice that's being made. Is it a healthy choice? Is it a useful choice? Can we find the healthy way? And this is also true in meditation practice. How we meditate is maybe more important than what meditation we do. Can we meditate in a way that feels nourishing, that feels nice for us, that of course we want to meditate? Or are we a taskmaster who's trying to prove themselves or need to be disciplined or need to kind of do it for approval? Or I don't know what. And that if you really feel, it's not going to feel so nourishing. So it isn't that we're supposed to be constantly evaluating, constantly looking for this. That would be unskillful, unnourishing. But rather, as we settle down in meditation and in relationship to emotions, as we're settling down in a relaxed way, recognizing emotions, making space to experience and feel the emotions that we have, taking time to feel the physical, the embodied side of it, the mental side, the story-making side maybe, the emotions themselves, how they feel. All these things contribute to a almost spontaneous or automatic recognition. Oh, this doesn't feel so good. Oh, this does feel good. This is a way forward. This is nice to feel this way. And to be guided by this, by the wholesomeness and unwholesomeness, the beneficial and unbeneficial consequences of things. And then we find our way. And every moment that we're at a juncture between and a fork between the wholesome and unwholesome. And we find the Buddhist path to freedom by walking the wholesome path, the freeing path. So that was a long presentation, but part of what we're looking at in emotions is the consequences of having them. And that's the topic for right now for the next meditation. So let's begin this meditation. Many of us, it's now after lunch, so it might be nice to, if it's easy enough for you, to sit up a little straighter, so there's a little bit more energy, maybe. Maybe it's useful to keep your eyes open, half open. If without anything more, check in with yourself to see what mood or emotional state is present for you. Do you feel dull after lunch, energized? Confused by what I was teaching, or eager to apply it and do it? Is there something weighing on your heart or on your shoulders? Or agitated. Is there a sense of well-being or not? In whatever way you're feeling, whatever mood or emotional state you have, does it for you feel pleasant or unpleasant? Is it more on the pleasant side of things or more on the unpleasant side? If it feels more on the pleasant side or more on the unpleasant side, where do you feel that pleasant and unpleasantness? Is there a location for it in the body? is it more in the mind's evaluation of it? Is how you're feeling, your emotional state, however subtle it might be or not so subtle, you feel like it has a good effect on you. Is it nice for you? Or do you feel that it's not so nice? Is it wholesome or unwholesome? You were going to stay this way for a long, long time. Does this have a good effect for you or not? Might there be a way of recognizing all this, where the recognition is wholesome. The recognition feels like this is nourishing, good to know and acknowledge in a simple, clean, direct way. This is how it is. Of it all, to become aware of your body breathing, breathing in and breathing out. As you're simply sitting here, recognizing the breathing, relaxing best you can, see if you can notice whether what is happening feels wholesome or unwholesome, beneficial or not beneficial. And keep it that simple. Don't try to fix anything or make it better. It's quite consequential to simply recognize what is wholesome and what is unwholesome, and then continuing to trust the basic mindfulness. This is how it is. What shift in your meditation would give you a little more sense of silent nourishment? Then, as we come to the end of this sitting, how are you feeling now? It's the emotional state, the mood. Who are you? And in some simple way, can you discern whether this is nourishing for you or not nourishing? You remain this way for a long time, for months and years. Would this take you in a beneficial direction or a not beneficial direction? What can you do right now for the next minute or so to be present with an attitude, an approach, a practice that feels like this is good. If I sustain this for the next few years, this would be a good result. What would that be for the next 60 seconds? So part of what makes certain emotions skillful or unskillful, they lead to a good benefit or not a good benefit, has to do with the attitude that maybe comes along with the emotion or the desire that comes along with it. For the Buddha, there's a whole slew of positive spiritual emotions that embedded in them is an attitude or a request or an invitation, come here. It's almost like within them, there's like this calling, come here, stay here, be with this. It's a little bit like having a desire in it. There's a meditative joy and happiness. There's compassion. There's a kind of patience and equanimity. There's kind of a faith and confidence that when you feel it, you feel, oh, this is good. It's almost like it says, come here, stay close to this. There are other emotions that are not so healthy for us that can alienate ourselves from ourselves. We're not really in touch with what's healthy, but it's, you know, we're being pushed and by the desires, the motivations that are in them, the attitudes in them. So it could be something as simple as doing walking meditation, just walking back and forth, 30 feet back and forth, doing meditating. And there's impatience and there's the urge to stop and do something else. Strong desire to, maybe I should check email. And they could kind of feel that pull. And I don't think too many people have become enlightened by reading email. I don't think that too many people have found it super nourishing to check the emails. But this thing, doing walking meditation, the impatience, the boredom that might be there, the feeling of maybe irritation that, or the feeling of dissatisfaction is not going well enough. I'm not concentrated enough. My mind is too distracted. And this sort of annoyance or distress around it. And then what is the motivation that's behind that? What is the push to do something in response to these uncomfortable feelings that we might have? Is it to get away? Is it to go find some distraction? Is it to blame someone? Blame me for suggesting a period of walking meditation. Is it, you know, what comes up for you? And something as simple as walking back and forth. So to notice, to do the practice of walking meditation, just walk back and forth and be present for your body, this physical sensations of walking as you walk, kind of enter that world. And then notice the feelings, the emotions, the attitudes, the moods that come into play. Notice if they're, you enjoy them, they feel healthy, or whether you don't enjoy them, they feel kind of awkward or difficult to have. And whichever they are, is there any motivation that they prompt? Are they motivating you to stop and do something different? Are they motivating you, this is good, I just want to do more of this. Let me just kind of settle in and really get into it. Don't give in, during this next walking period, don't give in to any of those motivations that take you away from doing the walking meditation. Very matter-of-factly, like there's a complete commitment, dedication that for the period of time, you're just going to walk back and forth, irregardless of any other impulse, so that you can start seeing the motivations that are behind some of the ways that we feel and how strong those motivations can be. Or how subtle the good ones can be. Like, oh, this is good. Stay here. Let's do this. Let's settle in now. If there's strong impatience and restlessness for you to stay doing this for the length of time, it might feel like you're in the rodeo. Hopefully you don't fall off the horse. Just stay there. Just stay no matter what. And see what you learn about yourself and what goes on. So we'll do that for, we'll come back here on the hour, which in California is at 3:00. So it's about 20, 25 minutes for walking meditation. And if you leave the sound on your computer, I'll ring a bell a few minutes before the time to start at 3:00. And maybe you can hear it. So enjoy your walk.